Welcome back to The Better Picture, the Red River Radio call-in talk show about photography. I'm Ross Foote, your host, and tonight I'm joined by guest David Miller from Shreveport. Charles Ward was in all the advertising to come up for this. Charles was scheduled to be here but had a late-breaking medical appointment and couldn't make the travel. Nothing dangerous, don't worry about him, but it's very inconvenient for him. But, you know, travel sometimes, like photography, you take the shot at the right time, and sometimes it's not the right time. So we wish Charles well, and hopefully we can reconnect in the future. David, the guest tonight, is an accomplished photographer as well as an accomplished musician. And tonight, among other things, we hope to explore the convergence of sight and sound in the creation of art. This is a live show, and we invite calls from our listeners on any photo topic of interest. You can call in at 800-552-8502, direct your questions to our guest, or just ask a question in general. We're just going to have a conversation, and we do not mind the interruption whatsoever. So if you have access to the web, you can get a preview of some of our guests' work at thebetterpicture.org. So, preliminaries out of the way, welcome to the studio, David.
Hi, Ross. Thanks for having me. It's quite an honor to be on your show. Thank you.
Well, it's my privilege to have in our local and sometimes foreign photographers. Start off, let's introduce you some to our listeners. How'd you get started in photography?
You know, I kind of come from a family of photographers. I think, you know, nowadays you can say you come from a family of photographers because everybody has a camera on their phone. But seems like my mother always had a camera at family events, birthdays. You know, nothing uncommon or unusual. And the same thing with my stepmother. But I just liked early on as a child, like that gratification of clicking a button and then waiting a couple of weeks or whatever and you get your pictures back. So luckily I got my first camera when I was at the age of 8. So, and what's kind of funny, what's followed through my entire life, so that was 47 years ago, is my first pictures were of taking pictures of people doing things. It was my brother's birthday party, and I still have those images, you know, and I'm wow. Following the kids around in the front yard. We lived in San Bernardino, California, and got these action shots and stuff. And it's just kind of funny because, you know, whether I'm shooting musicians or doing, like, photojournal work or a portrait, I generally like taking pictures of people doing things.
So what was your first camera?
Oh, I wish I knew. I really don't know. I know it was a 126. And it's kind of funny because by the time I got to high school, I was shooting some kind of crazy things. I've always liked antiques, so I don't know. Somehow I came across this old, like, 1930s folding Kodak. The thing took 620 film. So up until I was about, like, age 16, you could get film for that thing. So when I was in high school, I was shooting this, and it's a big old negative, bigger than, you know, four by four. And, of course, you can't look through the lens. You're just sitting there kind of like setting the focus on it. It had a simple little mirror thing.
And you were shooting people in action shots with that thing?
No.
Okay.
I shoot all kinds of stuff. I guess my interest in photography is if it's been done, I want to try it, you know. Like, right. I have a list. I still haven't gotten my green tree frog. I still have that image. You know, I want that image. So I do, you know, macro. I do, you know, astro was kind of cool. My brother's also a photographer, and he, you know, it's kind of like we have similar interests, but then they're also a little bit divergent because he doesn't do as much, like, people photography. He'll do, like, birds and nature and stuff, and I'd rather be, like, where the action is and people doing things.
Do you email things back and forth?
Oh, yeah. Well, Facebook, honestly. Yeah, or text message. Yeah, to me, Facebook is really, like, connected me to just it's immense. I mean, and it's kind of fun, like, you, well, I know I'm jumping ahead from
That's
your
all right.
original kind of the background question, but, like, if I see a band, whether it's in Natchitoches at the, you know, violin contest that they have in July or something like that, you meet people, you friend them on Facebook, and you're like expanding this network of friends, and it's just, you know, who could have foreseen that years ago? That you know, and then to put photography into that is kind of a neat part.
Yeah, it's just not a postcard sin. It's actually something that you can really get out. Well, so you came of age. You grew up with film cameras,
right? Absolutely.
And did you do your own developing? Did you do your own processing?
When I was a teenager during the summer, I found this very cheap enlarger made out of plastic and stuff, but still, and it came with a little pack of paper and the chemicals and all that stuff. So without really knowing what I was doing, I had some negatives. So I would take my big 620 negatives, and you could just lay that on the paper, expose it to light, and make little contact sheets. But I really didn't understand it. And I remember one time when I was in high school, another kid, a friend of mine, was also into photography and had a little darkroom, and I remember seeing that. But I really didn't get into, like, serious darkroom work until I moved here 30 years ago.
So in high school, were you shooting a football team and doing all that kind of stuff?
No, honestly, that's funny because we were just talking off radio about I'm a musician. So when I was in high school, it was like, you know, for four straight years, nothing but band, just constantly marching or in marching season or concert season. And like we were talking privately, when I'm busy playing music, the photography kind of gets pushed aside. When things are kind of slow with music, the photography gets kind of, you know, pushed up to the forefront. So, no, on vacations, yes, I'd shoot. And it was mostly just kind of like what beginners shoot. They just go outside, and if something fancies their eye, you know, try to shoot a butterfly or a boat going by with a water skier, stuff like that. But there was definitely no specific, like, one type of photography that I was doing. I was just kind of like just having fun,
right.
Really.
I think Deal Johnson, one of our prior guests, always talked about the muse. Sometimes you just see something and go, all right, damn it, now I got to go take that picture.
You have to.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was that the other day? I was at Cane River Plantation over at, what do they call that place? Isn't it Cane River? Anyway, Oakland Plantation. And I'm walking by, it's about to close, you know, closing time, and I see this hand-hewn wood on this barn, and the light's hitting it just right, and I'm like, I've got to stop. I've got to take a picture of that texture. Nobody else might understand why you do that, but it's trying to capture that light, that shadow, that texture, and then, you know, also the message that this is, almost 200 years old, and somebody saw, you know, hand-hewn this wood.
So when you're looking at that, what catches you first? Is it the light? Is it the composition? Is it the uniqueness of the texture?
Yeah, that's a great question. Probably that texture, because I think without light you wouldn't see the texture.
Right.
And then you start thinking in your mind, like, what kind of here's a thing that I see a lot of, you know, and you have to zone into what is the composition. You can be, you know, I don't know what the word would be, you know, enamored or whatever at any particular scene, and you might take a record shot of it, but you really didn't zone into what is it in that scene that really caught your attention. So, yeah, in answer to your question, it's that texture and the light, but then you start thinking in compositional terms, or not terms, but, you know, technique, like, how can I convey what I'm seeing to get it onto the camera?
And that leads to a great point, and And I do this. I will sometimes take the picture and then go back and figure out why I took the picture.
Absolutely.
As opposed to, I'm going to set this up and I'm going to move this and get this right.
Right.
And that's a good tip. Sometimes what you see in the picture is not the whole picture.
Right.
And, you know, I encourage people to trust your gut. If you see something, take the picture. You can crop to it later. You can move to it later. And it, you know, the theory for me had always been in composition, if you have the time, get anything that doesn't help the picture out of it.
Absolutely.
But if you can't figure it all out, still take the picture.
Take
you can
the picture
do that later.
Anyway, yes.
You
yeah.
can do that later.
And, you know, with our editing capabilities now with the computer, you know, it's...
Well, so did you ever get to a proper dark room where you could
Oh, yeah. When I moved to Shreveport in late 89, got a little more serious about it because, you know, I'm setting up a house by myself, you know, and can kind of like spend more time with my hobbies. And I joined Shreveport Photographic Society. And, you know, the first few competitions I did, I would be taking my negatives and photos to D's or par excellence, all these companies that we had at the time. Great companies, no longer around. And that kind of gets expensive. And then you realize, like, with, you know, a little bit investment up front, you can get kind of a cheap enlarger, you get an okay lens, you know, until you can afford it, start printing your or developing your own film. And so, yeah, eventually I had a real nice dark room with a real nice dichromatic head that was good for black and white and multi-grade paper. I did eventually, like, really get into it.
And then you start realizing how much more control there is on the back end.
Oh, yeah.
Than just sending off a negative, say, and do something with
well,
it.
Well, yeah, and I think really you get to the point, going back what I was saying, like when you're paying somebody else to do it, invariably you get to a point where what they present to you is not your vision.
Right.
And you can't blame them. They're going to look at it, and they may interpret it their way. They may just flat, you know, print it without any dodging or burning. And or they may try to do it artistically, but that might not align with what you have in mind. So you get to a point where you're like, the only way I'm really going to get this stuff looking the way that I want to do it or the way that I want to see it is you have to do it yourself.
Right. Ansel Adams talked about the negative being the score.
The score.
And the print being the
performance. Absolutely.
He went back, actually, and printed some pictures, some negatives, 30 years after he had printed
absolutely.
The original.
Yeah, like Moonrise over Hernandez.
Yeah, he said, and they were different images because he was a different person bringing different things
That's
out.
Funny you said that because if I can kind of interject, talking about darkroom technique and the image quality, the printers that I was involved with and my friends, we were kind of influenced by, like, I don't know, did they call them zone 6 photographers? Anyway, where you try to represent all the zones possible in the image. And I still do that with digital. Somebody asked me once, they compared my work to somebody else, and they weren't being really negative about the other person, but they're saying, there's something there. And I said, there's two things I really have not changed, and I really, it's like, it's my gospel. It's maintain detail in the highlights, don't overblow your highlights and have some shadow detail.
Right. If you're joining us late, our guest tonight is David Miller. If you have questions or comments, you can call in at 800-552-8502. And that really, you know, going into the printing aspect,
right.
We have a lot of listeners. There's just a lot of people that have never been in a dark room, but they do work with Photoshop. And it amazes me the icons, the images they use in Photoshop are the wand with the bulb or the two hands.
Exactly.
I mean, it's, you know, for those of us that remember the smell of the chemicals.
Oh, yeah. It never goes away.
It never does go away.
But just one last thing about the Ansel Adams thing, because something that was kind of profound to me, because even though you try to, you know, maintain detail in the shadows and don't overblow the highlights, there are instances where you can let the shadows go. And it took me years to really believe that. And I was at an exhibition of Ansel Adams prints, one of the last ones they had at the R.W. Norton Gallery. And there was a print, I don't know the name of the title, but it's reedy grass. And so you have these little blades of grass coming out of water. And I studied that. I had his book called Examples. So you can actually read what Ansel is saying about these images. And here he is dead all these years later, and I'm standing there, nobody around, and I'm studying this. And it dawned on me, kind of like an aha moment, that he let his shadows go to complete black with no detail. And I thought, you know, if Ansel can get away with it, then, you know, it's not a bad thing to go to completely black in the shadow region.
Right. I found that he got away with some things that I haven't, but that's okay. You know, it's he gets to do that, or did. So progressing on. So you were doing this photography,
right?
Things that were interest and honing your craft, as
right.
you would. When did you? What was the first picture you ever sold? What was the first time you made money?
Yeah, it would have been for Shreveport Regional Arts Council, SRAC.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I've always, like I said, enjoyed taking pictures of people doing things. And I really don't know how that lined up where I met with Pam Acheson or something. But they have this great thing in our town in the 90s called Downtown Neon Saturday Night. So I was constantly taking pictures of that. Showed some of these pictures to them. They would buy them, and kind of I got assignments that way.
We're going to come right back to that. We have a caller in. We have Ann from Jefferson, Texas. Ann, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Great. What's your question? What's your comment?
Well, I understand that the Union Pacific steam locomotive will be coming into Marshall on November 11, and I wonder if Mr. Miller has any helpful hints on photographing the locomotive.
Wow. That's a nighttime thing, isn't it?
No, I think they're coming in like Sunday afternoon, and it'll be on display on all day Monday.
Okay, well, it's going to be kind of like an air show. You're going to have people getting in way of the train. Do they let you board the train and look at the controls and all of that?
I don't know that they do. I'm assuming that I'll just have to take shots from like at a distance.
Right.
And I actually got to shoot the Durango to Silverton train.
Oh, nice.
Which was when it had it in motion. The old steam ones are fun when it's going because you have to time it to get the puffs and the steam and all that kind of stuff. And you have to be close enough to get the picture and far enough away not to get hit. So, you know,
right.
The little thing. And what I found, and I didn't do the homework that you're attempting to do right now, is I got tangled up between getting the massiveness of it and then I finally gave up. I couldn't get a vantage point, and I think David's right. You can have a lot of people around. But if you
might not be a bad thing, though.
But if you start looking at the pieces of that old equipment, the valves, the shafts, the wheels, I mean, the compositions that come out with the wheel with that thing in a static display.
Yes.
So take whatever different lenses you have, but kind of going back to the first part of our conversation, if something draws you to this would be a good picture, keep bearing down until you find out that it is just that brass and steel and pipe coming out with the steam leaking out or whatever it is that you're doing. You know, kind of like the movie directors you see that hold up that little eyepiece and start checking with it. Hopefully they'll have a viewing stand or something you can get up. If you can't get into it, then there's some beautiful shots that you can play out of that. And that actually leads on, and I appreciate the question. I wish we had a real good answer, but steam locomotive photographers are...
There was one of them, I'm trying to remember his name, started with an O.
Yeah.
That did all those nighttime. So as soon as she said train, I'm thinking photography, you got to do it at night with lights. So I'm sorry about that. But like what Ross said, I would definitely like, you know, a focus in like on the wheel and that whatever, that plunger thing that comes out. Everybody always gets that picture.
The cylinder.
Yeah, yeah. I don't have one, and that's probably the first thing I'd say, excuse me, while I try to take a picture of that.
Right. and that does bring up another point, and that is the etiquette.
Oh, yes.
You know, when you see what you want to take and you get focused and you get it set up, get in and take it, but, you know, there's probably four other Anns who would like to get there, and there is a shooting etiquette on that. So when is this happening for anybody else that's interested?
Sure. They're coming into Marshall on Sunday the 10th at 3:40 p.m., and then they'll be on display in Marshall on the 11th from 9 to 3.
Well, I would definitely be there for them coming in because those things really are neat. That's one you need to kind of back up and get the steam working. And if they'll let you anywhere close to it in that magic hour, sunsetting, you know, after 5, you'll get some fabulous long shadows because those things are just massive. So yeah. I wish you the best of luck. Great question and a great tip for the rest of us to see if we can find the time to run. The Saints aren't playing. I'm not sure about the Cowboys. So people have Sunday afternoon off. Yeah,
that's right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks. Head to Marshall. So, well, that just ties right into what we were talking about as to how you find a piece of the picture where you're going to go.
Out of the bigger scene, what is it that – and, you know, we were talking about another photographer here in town that I find inspiration from. And we occasionally bump into each other, and I'll watch him. He's been a working photographer many more years than I have. And it's interesting to see how two different people can see the same – be at the same place but see things differently, and also from a perspective. You know, we don't always have to shoot at 5 foot level or whatever, at eye level, and you can get down and see how things work, you know, looking up from a low angle and things like this. But and I'm always working on that. There's so much to improve.
I've got a little brother whose son is a band member, mm-hmm. in high school, and a big marching band. He's gone on now to teach it. And he would always go out to shoot it. And he said he was up in Alexandria, Virginia area. When the Washington Post sports photographer comes out to the games, he brings a little stool and sits on it. And he said he never thought about it. And you're right, 2 feet.
Right.
You know, just dropping down to a knee changes perspective.
Yeah,
completely.
When the Grambling, the historic Grambling marching band was in Betty Virginia Park, I forget what they call it. It was a big shindig earlier this spring. I did the same thing. Just, you've got all these band members and trombones and you know, sousaphone bells. And when you shoot that at a wide angle, you know, like 35, even wider than a 35, you know, and you're looking up at this and it just kind of spreads. It envelops, the intensity kind of surrounds you and you feel like you're part of it.
Well, one of my favorites is to put a telephoto and shoot to the bell of the sousaphone. And get the reflections back of the whole field.
Nice,
you know,
nice.
Just I've got several that you just cropped.
Know
just
exactly
to that,
what you're talking and about, it, right?
That's again just a little piece. Well, when you moved to work with the Arts Council, that was not. I've got an artistic picture we're going to do. They would send you on an assignment to say go cover this event.
Yeah, basically. What I was talking about, the event was mostly the Downtown Neon Saturday Night events that happened during the summers. So every Saturday they would close several blocks around the courthouse square, and you'd have bands on all the corners. It's great. I mean, one of the
best. What time period was this?
1992, 93, 94.
So it was early. All shooting film.
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah. Yeah, I had my Nikon 8008 and a Leica M2 that I shot, yeah. Great cameras.
Sweet camera, yeah.
We were shooting T-Max 3200 at 2000, processed to D76, 10.5 minutes. I just remember that. That's
Well, you know what? You've been in there and you've shot it.
Yeah.
Did you find you were more judicious in your shots when you were having to process it yourself as opposed to now when you can put a 128-gig card in your camera and go?
Well, which I just happen to have in my camera. Maybe I'll answer that kind of backwards. I know for myself, I see photographers now that kind of, I think the nickname is, what is it, spray and pray?
Yeah.
So it's like, I always keep mine on single advance, and I've always been basically the type of photographer that tries to get the shot that I want or anticipate. And something about, like, pressing the shutter before, during, in the middle, and after the action, I don't feel like I'm in control. And there's something kind of rewarding. Like, I've got now, you know, where like a drummer, you can time it, you know, just like when he's going to hit the cymbal. And it's like, psh, and you hit it, and you see the cymbal doing that. Well, I guess you can, like, do the spray and pray. But, no, I don't shoot a lot. But that's a good question, because one thing that I do a lot of is you need to cover. It's like you're filming a movie. You need to shoot more footage than you're going to use, and you're going to edit it down.
Right.
So I'll probably, you know, at a single rate, take maybe like 10 images in this part, and then I might move over here. And these 10 images will be similar, but they're not going to be shot like motor wine type.
And besides that, the motor drive, I mean, the auto, if you get 10 frames a second, that's good, but you can have that drumstick on the cymbal or
well,
a lot
okay.
can a lot can happen in a tenth of a
okay,
second with a drummer.
To confess, I have on occasion shot this wide open when my friend John is playing a drum solo. You know, just to see the movement and then pick the one. But I still, my default right. is not to do that. But you know, the other day I was shooting something macro, and unless you're on a tripod and it's real steady, you don't realize, but you're going forward and backward and stuff. And I'm thinking, like, that might be an instance on high continuous, because somewhere in that little sway going back and forth, those little tiny little, you know, sweet olive blossoms are going, one of them's going to be in focus.
Right. And that's not a matter of blowing in the wind and trying to catch it and timing. That's just a matter of
just
compensating yeah. for being old.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you know, thank the Lord for autofocus, because as,
yeah.
As the eyes.
Vibration reduction.
Yeah, there are some things that that do really help us. Did you at any point support yourself totally with photography?
Oh, no, never. It's always been like, you know, you almost don't like to use the word hobby, because it sounds like, well, it's a hobby. It's a passion. It's a lifetime. It's what I do. But if you like something, I guess it's what the true definition of an amateur is. You love it so much that the money is never like what would motivate you.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's you call yourself semi-professional as an excuse to justify buying the better equipment.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Yeah, it's not.
That 104 1.5 or, yeah, I mean that 105 1.4 lens.
Yeah. Those kind of things will do that. And you will occasionally have people that will use your stuff. I mean, you.
Oh, yeah, all the time.
How do you share your photographs?
There again, mostly through social media. Yeah. And I'm not going to get in the debate, because I know there are people that probably hate people like me that, like, are gracious with what they take, share it. Because in a sense, you know, I may be potentially cutting out a professional that could have shot that and made money at it. But, you know, I finally came to the realization, justification, whatever you want to call it, that if that bothers them, then they just need to up their game on how they take
right.
pictures.
If you can't beat
you know,
me.
And my kind of my game plan or my idea is when I retire in a few years, then I'll probably do more, you know, professional, like part-time photojournal work.
Right. We have another caller in, Cody from Shreveport. Cody, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
What's your question?
Well, I'm getting towards retirement, and I want to get back into photography, and I really enjoyed a 4x5 format and some 120 format with T-Max and 100. So what kind of digital camera or what kind of capacity do I need to kind of duplicate that, you know, mostly black and white? What do you got?
You know, I used to shoot a 120, a Rolleiflex, and I do have a 4x5. Didn't shoot it much. And I currently use a Nikon D850, and the resolution coming out, it's almost 50 megapixels. It's outstanding. But I think for your interest, probably, and I've never shot one, but I know about them, that medium format Fuji is supposed to be, I think, what is it, close to 100 megapixels?
Yeah. And one of the issues you're going to have is they generate such enormous
files.
That you know,
100 gigabytes and higher.
In the 35mm format, Cody, Kodachrome had about 21 megapixels of information. You know, you've got over 2.5 times that in your camera
mm-hmm.
now. If you like the 4x5 and you like the ceremony of the bigger camera and the setting up and all the rest of it, then you can.
No.
Oh no!
Get away from that.
That was a pain in the, you know.
Oh, okay. In that case, you're one of us. They
yeah.
have got.
There are people that like that Zen type thing about medium.
Yeah,
format.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
large format.
No, I used to be able to taste Fixer, you know, when I'm getting my
yeah.
hands right. But those days are gone. I'm going to be modern.
If you
find a camera that can give me that resolution.
If you think in terms of Kodachrome, the Cat's Meow, being 21 megapixels of information, then you've got 24 megapixel cameras out that'll do that, and you can get back in and do 35 millimeter. Your choices are mirrorless versus single lens reflex. Go to the B&H website and just browse, and they've got all kind of stuff. And welcome back in. They're telling me I have another caller in. You got another question?
Right, thank you, guys.
All right, Cody. Appreciate
it. Thank you very much. All right, bye-bye.
Thanks.
All right, we got another caller. Who's calling in?
This is Charles Ward.
Oh, Charles Ward. Yeah. Got your seat warmed up right here. How you feeling?
Oh, well, it's not fun, but I finally got out of the wound care, and they did a lot of good for me. Didn't get out till 4 o'clock, so there's no way I could have
been. Yeah, we're carrying on.
I've been listening, doing a fine job. I wanted to ask David Miller. I was looking through his photographs, and they're all fantastic.
Oh, thanks.
Well, you're welcome. But I of course noticed the one that I've got one of Buddy Flett.
Right.
I love the one that you shot. I was just curious about what's the background on that. Where did you?
Oh yeah, that was about a year ago. Every October in. People hearing this should come out. Every October in Mooringsport at Shiloh Baptist Church, they have a get-together.
Exactly. Lead belly.
Yeah, the Lead Belly get-together, and that's what it was. And there again, we were talking about, I'll say his name, Stan Carpenter. When we got to the gig, if you will, the event, I noticed like Stan shooting from a low angle. So it's not that I was trying to copy him, but I got a little encouraged or whatever, kind of like, I think I'll try a low angle. So I was actually basically, you know, almost sitting on the ground, and Buddy was like right over my left shoulder, and I'm trying to remember what lens I took, obviously wide, because I know the shot you're talking about. And I just looked up, and I shot it, and then I had to do a little post-editing work in Photoshop to take some trees out and stuff. But, yeah, that's what it was. It was at the Lead Belly get-together.
Nice. Every year I say I want to get my guitar and come up there.
Come on down, yeah.
Those are the choices, guitar or camera.
I'll bring both.
You bring
yeah.
I've generally seen you, Charles, with both. Well, I appreciate the call in. I hope you really improve and get well, and we'll get back together.
Sure.
We got another call coming in, Nate from Spanaway, Washington.
Wow.
Nate, you there?
Yep, I'm here. This is Nate calling from Spanaway, Washington. And earlier in the program, I heard you use language like rhythm, and you had an analogy with drums or a drumstick hitting a cymbal. I was wondering how you can bring out drums and specifically rhythm in photography.
Oh, that's a great question, and it's something you're constantly challenged with, because you can use a flash and a slow shutter speed. So you're showing, and what do they call that? Rear curtain sync.
Right.
So the way your shutter closes will capture or will show the motion of the drummer's hands, but actually capture detail. And you just have to experiment with it. I shoot a camera that doesn't have a built-in flash most of the times, but I also have a Nikon 750, and it's fun because it's got a nice, simple, built-in flash.
Right.
So when I'm shooting that camera, I do that. Then there's also just the, you know, shoot it at, 1/80th and show the movement. There's so many different ways. But I think when I shoot drummers, I adhere to my own rules. Because I see a lot of, I'm on some concert photographer groups on online, Facebook, and I see a lot of pictures of drummers, but you never see the hands and the sticks. So one of my kind of rules is try to show the sticks, dummy, you know, so you know it's a drummer. But yeah, I would definitely try with the using a flash and a slower shutter speed. And what's wonderful about that is, you know, you can decrease your aperture size, so you're getting a sharper, you know,
right.
Theoretically a sharper image. And you have, another thing is distance. You have to be close enough where the flash is effective so it stops that motion. But that's what I do. Or you can experiment with, you know, just regular room illumination and trying to show, you know, the drummer you can't pan. He's sitting there. So it's either his hands are going to be moving or you've caught them in midair or you've used a flash to show the movement.
And one of the other fun things with shooting drummers is scout out the positions where you can get in between the cymbal or between the hi-hat and the snare. And, you know, obviously you're a drummer, so you understand where, and that would help to know, how do I want to be seen from the other side of this? But that's a great question, and the timing, you may have seen the pictures of the blur of a car, and then suddenly it's in bright focus mm-hmm. at the end of the blur. I think that's what Dave is talking about with the drumsticks. If you put that flash on just at the end, you have a naturally exposed picture of the blur, and then all of a sudden it just pops. Crisps it up yeah. and pops it. But the best, what I found, my best luck has been to just listen to the drums for a while and get into the groove with the drummer. And then you kind of know where it's going and to watch with it. But that's an excellent question.
Great question.
Yeah, great question. Appreciate it. All right, let's get back into the music scene mm-hmm. some more. You are a performer.
Right.
And as you say, you compartmentalize. You don't do a lot of one or the other. They have to overlap.
Oh, yeah.
As far
yeah.
as the creative process right. of, am I going to augment or diminish, if those were proper terms,
right.
a note, or am I going to underexpose or overexpose mm-hmm. a half?
Oh, yeah, yeah. A friend of mine, we've always talked about being a musician. I think you learn early on that it's you, it's not your instrument. I mean, you'll get to a point where you'll know the limitations of your instrument. You really will. There'll be a point where it doesn't resonate right, it doesn't respond properly, and then you know it's time to go to the next step, get a new bow or, you know, a new type of trumpet. And so I've always used that same kind of like approach to photography. So when I get a camera, I shoot it a long time, you know, 10 years or whatever. It becomes like the back of your hand. There's no question about where the controls are. But as far as like the actual shooting and maybe the influence, I know that as many times as I shoot like blues musicians, I know the music. So you know the lyrics, you know the song form, the 12 bars, you know the choruses, where they're going to go. And also if you watch the musicians, try to take a cue off of like, is this guy kind of signaling this guy that he gets the first solo? So you kind of get in pole position. Because there's nothing kind of worse than being on a bandstand and all the action's happening over here on stage left and you're over here on
stage right.
Particularly like in a small scene. Now, like if you're in a theater or something, you just have to get what you get. But I think as far as like any kind of influence from music, I think it's knowing or it's trying to think like, what would a musician want themselves to look like? Because, you know, in a fleeting second, like 1/160th of a second, you can get a grimace. You can get, like, just a bad look where the guy looks completely confused. I try not to go that way. I'm, you know,
yeah.
I'd rather show, you know, like, not that you're flattering, but, you know, you want somebody that looks like they're in charge and stuff, not like some like a deer in the headlights, like, oh, my gosh, what am I doing up here soloing in the middle of something? So
right.
I try to... And, you know, that people say that, in a sense, is that dishonest? I don't know. You're definitely, like, taking the editorial approach of, like, this is what I want to show and this is what I'm not going to show. And I try to show people at their best because that's the way a musician wants. They don't want to, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of hard to explain. But I think One advantage is, I think, knowing the song form and just being familiar with instruments and the way they work. And that,
so when,
I think that
when you're going to go shoot a venue,
mm-hmm.
do you stage it ahead of time, light check, get
Absolutely.
Around?
You know, but here's what's funny. You think that you're going to get there and you've been there before. And you're like, oh, yeah, I know, you know, Telegraph Park at Marshall has those big spotlights. And then off to the side of the stage, they have this LED. So you're always going to get those two combinations of light. And if you're shooting live view, you're going to get ribboning. And I know, like, what that's an anomaly that shows lines in your on your image. And so, like, a couple of weeks ago, they were having the Fire Ant Festival concert, and I knew some performers that were playing, so I'm like, yeah, I'm going to go there. It was advertised at Telegraph Park, so I'm already, you know, I can shoot at 2,000. I know already. You get there, and it's not even there. They move it, you know, across the street, back behind the courthouse on a small stage with combined LED lights of purple, green, all
right.
the stuff. So, yeah, I, you know... There's nothing wrong with being prepared, but you also have to be like, oh, well, expect flexible. The unexpected, yeah.
And so what has changed with the digital use on these LED lights and all the rest of it? Has it helped you or hurt you?
That's a good question. Mostly it's an annoyance. I worked on one image, just a simple image of a girl performer who had beautiful blonde hair. But she's being illuminated on this side with magenta light and this side with green light and all this. And I ended up basically having three edits of the same photo and then cloning in certain parts that were different filtered. So I got her complexion that looked good and the hair that looked good. And then you just have to like, well, there's going to be some magenta on the guitar. And the funny thing is when you open your image up, like in RAW or whatever, and you look at the white balance settings and all these, you know, slides and dials, there never seems to be enough where you can remove magenta without affecting it.
Yeah.
I don't know. We have a ways to go, and I don't like necessarily revert or whatever, just start shooting black and white because of that. But sometimes you have to go like, well, it's going to be a better black and white image than a color image, because unless you're using some post edit effects or something where you're going to do something different with the color.
Right. Well, that is an issue when you have, especially if you have a little sunlight creeping in, and then you've got these LEDs, which sometimes to me pulse.
They pulsate. I see that.
it affects it. I had an image once of a guitar player, and I looked at it, and everything was crisp focus except for one string, which was blurred.
Hmm.
And it didn't make sense in the same plane, and a good friend of mine, a musician, looked at it and said, I can hear that note.
Yeah, he just strummed it.
And it was the vibration.
Yeah.
And he said, I can hear that picture by where his hands are. Well, that's okay, but the light gets funny. I'm going to take just a quick break here. We always try to do one thing for a smartphone minute, just because we do know and acknowledge that there are a lot of phones out there, and that's become kind of the camera du jour. And with the new phones that are coming out, and I do not have any of the fancy ones, but there's telephoto, ultra-wide, low-light. Bottom line, there's a wonderful blend of convenience and really good cameras, but know their limitations. There's a little bitty lens, and there's a reason we pay the money we pay for the big lenses, because it gathers more light. So as the light goes down, physics just demand that the picture's not going to be as sharp. You just need a little more horsepower. You'll see the big pictures shot on an iPhone or shot on a Samsung. I was teaching in Lyon, France, and walked in, and there were the iPhone pictures. This was two or three years ago. They were 60 feet tall.
Wow.
I mean, just these enormous sides of buildings shot on an iPhone.
What do they look like?
Well, they look good, but that's serious post-production.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
So don't be tempted as to why my pictures don't come out like the ones that you see in the advertisements. But I do have two tips for you. One is remember to make use of that autofocus. I mean, of the manual focus. You hold the camera, tap on what you want, and what it does is it not only focuses your, it sets your lighting as well. And the other one, and this is the easiest tip of all, clean the lens. you get pocket and purse grunge on it, and they're working so hard as it is, it's kind of hard to do. We got another call in from Ray in Fairfax, Virginia. Ray, hoping it's not about smartphones. We passed that.
No, it's not about smartphones. I want to go back to something that you all answered in response to the fellow from Spanaway, Washington. You said you need to kind of get in the groove watching someone playing music. But I'm thinking just about how we compose and take pictures and try to create music with images. What does that mean to each of you to, quote, get in the groove and to make a musical image?
Well, I'll lead off. To me, it's in a comfortable setting where I either know the musician or something else, then I really want to become one with the music. I want to get in and in, because I know, I love to shoot Steve Kahn and Sonny Landreth. And I know that when Steve is going to lean back and give his long howl, I want to catch at the peak of that. And to do that, I've got to kind of agree with somebody I don't know, then I got to kind of sense where they're going. And I'm not a musician. As I told them before, I mean, I play the stereo quite well. But I'm an appreciative audience. And I try to filter that in and go, this is about to happen. I want to keep it at the apex. And I'm not a spray and pray guy. I'm one that, it, to me, it's a sport. I'm going to catch them in exactly that moment. And I find that it's really more enhancing than distracting with the music, because I get deeper into the music to figure out where it's going to come next. And sometimes I'm surprised, and, you know, sometimes I'm not.
Right.
David?
Yeah, exactly. There's an apex in everything that, generally speaking, is probably going to be your more impactful photograph. I was shooting last night, and I think they were doing The Sky's Crying. So you know the lyrics. You know that, you know, there's lyrics, and then there's Phil with the guitar. So I alternated. Like, I would pace myself. Then when the guy would come close to the microphone, I would shoot a certain way. Then I decided I would shoot his guitar feels. So you're letting the music kind of draw you in. And believe it or not, I mean, sometimes when things are just incredibly good, and you feel that you've gotten an image, I'll just, like, put the camera down and just enjoy the music. Like, wow, this is really happening. It's live. You're part of it. You're kind of there. It's like a happening. Everybody's getting the same kind of vibe. But I think, like, what Ross said is you kind of anticipate, you know, like an apex of action or, you know, a certain look or something like that, but you have to be kind of prepared for anything.
Right.
And I think when I shoot, like we were talking about the spray and pray method of, like, just oversaturating, you know, just shooting the camera, da 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 da. I shoot one image at a time, but I will move myself around. So I might take 10 images here. I might take 10 images over on from a different perspective. And I think in editing, you know, you'll have 10 very similar images, and you'll want to pick the best one of those, because I know from competition, I was in Camera Club and Photographic Society of America and a lot of things, you don't want two similar images that you've taken to compete with each other. So even if it's like Facebook and, you know, you've got like a real good picture of a solo guitarist and you've got another one and you're just posting one right after another, that weakens the effectiveness of your stronger image. So you have to kind of, like, it takes some kind of training, but you basically, like, you're not deleting it. You're just not going to show it. And you only show, like, the best of those images. And then that's what represents you. People go, oh, man, you're just capturing all the best expressions, but they don't realize, like, well, for that one image, 9 were, you know, like, really not that good, but, you know, I got lucky.
And you also, you have to pick the sides. I had the wonderful experience of seeing Brian Blade in our local small studio environment. And the joy on his face when he strokes those drums, and I'm not talking about banging them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then, you know, it's kind of like you see, he's a drummer. You need his hands in, too. Yeah. So, you know, there is that. But it was a great question, Ray. That's not the kind we get all the time, and I appreciate that with it. Let me move on, David. You'd said the photo clubs. Mm-hmm. Let's give some advice to our people out there. I've been in a photo club,
right.
Photographer's Guild in Alexandria, and you get some brutal, you know, hard critique, which you need.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think I joined Camera Club. It was about 1991 or 2. And I thought, you know, I had some good images. I believe it or not, it was at the courthouse, and I think it was the only Ku Klux Klan rally I've ever witnessed in my entire life. And I took pictures of it, and I thought they looked fairly newsworthy. I just remember this. And you know, you put them in competition, and the way it's set up is you have a competition, and we had a grading scale. Don't need to go into that, but the most important thing is the critique section of the meeting. And people were seeing stuff in the background that was distracting. that I, as a photographer, just accept. Well, it's there, you know. Move over 2 feet. Move, you know, I mean, and you realize, yeah, it can be kind of brutal, but you have to do a couple of things. You can either, like, look at it as having, like, thick skin and, like, or you, what I did was just kind of, like, separated myself from my work. It's like, this is on its own. Let's just see how it does, you know. And what you end up doing is you learn a lot. Because most people, the judges and the people that critique your work, they're not there to tear you down. They're giving you their experience.
Right.
And you do get to a point where, you know, you've learned what they've learned and you've gotten some awards and stuff like this. And then you start realizing, like, certain camera clubs have a certain look, that it's the old salty dog, bearded guy, you know. And it's like, really? Is that what PSA is all about?
Right.
And you say, come on. But, you know, invariably, and I've seen it, and it's still, even on the internet, you always have these, like, young people that think, like, well, I'm gonna create a whole new kind of photography. No, there's nothing wrong with learning the old salty dog and why people do that and that look, and the rules of composition and immediate impact. That's what I learned most about camera club competition, is it had to have immediate impact. It couldn't be something that was, like, subtle. They don't like subtleness in competition. It needs to go boom. It needs to happen then.
To the people then that are timid and don't want to jump into open critique and get involved, how do you advise them to up their game, kick it up a notch? Books, magazines, instructional manuals?
You know, I hadn't been a member of a camera club in 20 years, but one of the greatest things is just being amongst your peers. Everybody kind of has the same interest. You learn the latest equipment. You get to share that. So I guess being part of something and realizing that you're part of it and you're not an outsider, that really these people that may criticize your work, it's really for your own good. But, you know, with the internet, it's vast what you can learn on YouTube. I don't really follow YouTube videos because, I don't know, I just... they don't seem like they're communicating with me.
Right.
I don't.
Well, that's a good
but,
point.
But, I mean, that's definitely that's one way to do it. And I don't know. There's more of a community involved in the camera club situation, I think, than trying to tear you apart. I really highly recommend it. I really do.
And, you know, that's the comment you made about looking up different things. And, you know, Ann from Jefferson, if you're still out there, go to the web and type in best way to shoot a steam engine.
There you go.
And I'll bet you there's some people that say these are the things to look for, or angles, and you can get some ideas. And it's good to have other ideas to see if you can assimilate them. And that's the good thing about a club. Now, if you're not going to join a club because you don't want to do that or don't have the time, any books, any influences on you that you've seen from looking at other images, David?
Oh, gosh, I've always just loved the photographic image. I mean, over the years, you know, before the internet, you know, you'd be at a flea market and you'd see a couple of volumes of the Time Life volume on photography that just ended up being three foot wide, but you'd buy them in sections. It'd be like, oh, I ate that stuff up. So,
And how did that influence you? Did you find yourself going, oh, when I get to the Grand Canyon, I'm going to do this? Or was it just mushing the stuff into your head?
Just seeing what people have done and the whole history and, you know, the what's capable of, or what the capabilities of photography, really. But, I mean, I was, you know, my influences are kind of interesting because I guess one of my most influential music photographers is Francis Wolfe. Not very many people know that name. If you're into jazz, you do, because he's the guy that shot all the session photographs for Blue Note Records. So I like that. He used a Rolleiflex with a bulb on a stand, so it's a different look. But that was definitely an influence on me.
Well, and that's a good point. You can haunt those garage sales.
Oh yeah.
Coffee table books,
right? Got a lot of those.
Whether it's just on portraits or whether it's landscapes, get the exposure. Oh, we got a Mary from Shreveport. Mary, we got a little short time. What you got?
Okay, so when I was a photography student, I took some
some pictures just as a student, and it turned out that they were insensitive because they were picture photos of residents of an asylum that was adjacent to my college. But I had no idea that they would be so, you know, unacceptable. That was a long time ago. I'm impressed and kind of stunned that you got away with taking pictures of a Klan meeting.
And, it was a public rally or whatever on the courthouse steps.
Okay, so, well, good. That's good.
And Mary, but that does open a real good question as to when is it appropriate? And kind of like Dave was saying, you don't take a musician when he's having an off image.
No.
And you have to be, more people should be sensitive.
And I don't think there's anything wrong necessarily with what you took. I mean, Diane Arbus took a series of similar pictures, as well as a photographer named Chris Steele Perkins in the Middle East. If you're a photojournalist, you know, you're showing a story. I don't see why they would have thought that was insensitive. That's really unfortunate.
Well,
you weren't being exploitive or anything.
Right. Well, Mary's gone because she realized we were short on time. But I do appreciate the concept, and it is something to think about, kind of like that etiquette we were talking about. Don't get in front of people. If you're at a concert, don't hold your phone.
And they do all the time.
And film. You know, a whole song, because somebody behind you may want to take just one quick image. Well, time has once again absolutely flown by. I'm going to take this moment to thank everybody that contributed in our recent fund drive. That was a great help. And, you know, you don't have to wait for a fund drive. You can go ahead and communicate with us at any time with a check. We will take that. I'm going to thank David for being here tonight. This has been fun, and another one of those 20-minute hours to me.
I've had a blast.
It's so easy to do.
Is there a second hour?
And I also want to give a big thanks to Red River Radio and to the help they do. Tonight, Sheila, Tim, and Wally came in and helped on the phones. Kermit is here running the board. And, you know, we don't get paid. They don't get paid enough. The station works to make sure that we have local input. It's an absolute privilege to me to be tolerated and to be embraced with this community to say, let's get in and try this. So my hat's off, and my great thanks are to the entire staff of Red River Radio for doing that. We don't have the producers. We don't have the other stuff. This is just a local group that we have. So, keep that going, and you know, if you didn't quite make the fund drive and you got away from you can still send a check in, because we can still use it on the times that we have. And it was great. Well, David, I hope you continue on with your continued work. You've given
sure
me some
will.
Great tips.
Oh,
places we're going to run into each other.
Oh yeah, we're definitely.
I
maybe see, at the trains or something.
Right. I see Barbara from time to time at the house concerts.
Right.
I got to put.
I need to get there. It's been a while since I've been to a house concert.
I got to put the tiki on my list.
Yeah.
I got to do the other things to come by and shoot. So. Thanks also to all of our audience. You've been great. Appreciate the calls. Appreciate the effort. And we will see you next time we can schedule one of these up.